Tobin and Leroy here with you, 560 WQAM. Take you guys up until 2 here on the program.
I just did something really stupid.
What's that?
So, I was on Twitter on my computer,
mm-hmm.
and usually I can just turn up the volume,
mm-hmm.
but I don't have my headphones plugged. So I'm like, why? I'm tapped.
Why
can't I hear?
Why isn't this working? I don't understand. What's happening here?
The old get confused by technology.
I'm glad you said it.
Well, listen, I could have kept quiet and not said anything. So, like, yeah.
Accountability.
It is the best policy. Let's get to headlines here brought to you by Doral Hyundai. Doral Hyundai, choose from over 1,300 new Hyundai miles in inventory. Like the Tucson, Sonata, and Palisade. Remember, when it comes to Hyundai, the great deals are at Doral Hyundai. The Miami Heat, they lose last night. 126-106, big game by Donovan Mitchell. Panthers get the win over the Kings, 3-0. So they bounce back up to first place in their division. And we're all on Jimmy Butler watch. I got everybody on the noties.
Listen, there's no need to be on watch.
Why?
You know this to be a fact. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, Jimmy Butler's not going to play for the Heat anymore.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, the only interest that you could have is who do you think they could bring in? Because right now, it sounds like the Heat said they're trading for some Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
I know. The Heat are trading for anybody other than Bradley Beal.
Pretty much.
Because they don't want that smoke.
Well, they're going to be in the I guess it's interesting because we hear all this stuff throughout the week. Oh, the Heat lowered their asking price. You know, there's other teams that are swooping in, like, you know, the Warriors. Warriors got a big win last night. But the thing that was interesting with the Warriors is, you know, there was this report earlier in the year that you know, they asked the players about Jimmy Butler and bringing him in, and they didn't seem, you know, too into that.
Because Jimmy has done this to himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, listen, if you get to know Jimmy, you understand.
Mm-hmm.
The dude's a competitor, even though he's not competing now, right? But if you're on the outside looking in and this is all you see of Jimmy, why on earth would you sign up for that? And that's the part that has baffled me about this whole Jimmy thing, is that in his efforts to make a point or get what he wants, he has made his situation more difficult because this is what guys who don't know him see. This is what teams that don't know who Jimmy is, this is what they see. And so why would you sign up for that? If you're Steph and you're, say, Draymond, and you see how he's went scorched earth on the last few teams he's been with, and now the team that you thought had some of the best culture in the league, he's doing it to them. Why would you say, yeah, bring him here?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only question is, like, how many guys are going to be out there that switches, you know, what you're able to do this year? And if you do, like, it's a gamble because you don't know. But the thought process is, like, all right, eventually is he going to want to play basketball, right? And if you know.
Right.
And so I guess that's the gamble. But it does sound like still the Suns are still the team pushing the hardest. At least that's what Anthony Chang is reporting. Or he says a league source close to the situation indicated Wednesday that the Suns are still the team pushing the hardest for the disgruntled Butler. While other teams have called the Heat, registering some level of interest in Butler, the Heat's most serious discussions regarding Butler and the trade have been with the Suns up to this point.
Well, here's the problem. See, while we talk about how bad the Suns want Jimmy, we can also come to the conclusion that's how bad they want to get rid of
Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal. Yeah. So there's with the other teams, it's more along the lines of we want to bring Jimmy in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems to me that would be easier to work with because the Suns' whole issue with this is, oh, we can bring in Jimmy and get rid of Bradley Beal. That's why this became a big story,
yeah,
for them.
It's basically getting a guy who's redundant on the team, who's been, you know, put to a bench guy now.
Right.
To somebody who does fit you better, and you're spending the same money, basically.
Somebody said Butler is good in the playoffs. See,
he is.
I'm going to give you a lesson in sports, right? Butler was good in the playoffs, has been good in the playoffs. You don't know if Jimmy Butler is going to be good in the playoffs this year because he's a year older, more wear and tear on his body. And
well, not this year.
I mean, but 35 is still 35, whether you're healthy 35 or injured 35.
Okay, but 35 would take months off, like having to play a 30-game stretch. It is going to be less of a grind on.
Okay, guess what? I can give Joel Embiid as much of a break as he needs. Them bones still rubbing together on them knees. Like, so 35, and keep in mind,
but he doesn't.
It's not regular 35.
Mm-hmm.
It's 35 Tibbs years.
Okay, he hasn't played for Tibbs in forever, though, dude.
Okay, but it's still wear and tear. It adds up, dude.
I'm sure it does add up, but I will say, if one thing is going to help that, only having to play 30 games the rest of the way is going to help.
See, we make a lot of assumptions with that.
I think you're making an assumption.
No, I'm not.
You're making an assumption.
You're making
an assumption that's not going to work out, that he's old as old.
No, I'm making the assumption that I've only seen Jimmy play in 2/3 of the games the last 2 or 3 years of regular season. I'm not going to make the assumption that mysteriously he's going to play all of them. That's it.
Yeah, but he's not going to play all of them because he doesn't have any more games to play. Like, you know what I mean?
I understand.
It's like, and here's the thing with Jimmy Butler's injury past. It does usually equate to a lot of the bumps and bruises. I did a deep dive on this last year. And most of it is a first half of the season thing, and then he ramps himself up. This is going to be an interesting case because he doesn't have to ramp himself up. It's basically going to be a stretch run.
All right. I get what you're saying. Like, I just, with all of this stuff that has happened in the last month, right, I am not just going to assume that if Jimmy is healthy, he's going to perform. I'm just not, because he's older. We had the discussion earlier in the year that you think, right, that part of the reason why he mysteriously had the bubble guts because he rolled his ankle and he was like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
Okay, but
but that's a common injury that he has all the time.
Yes.
I just don't think he wanted to risk it.
Okay, so you're saying if it's a common injury that he has, right? Mm-hmm. You're saying, if he goes to a new team, he's just going to blow up these last.
No, I'm not saying he's going to, but I think the idea that he's completely cooked, I think, is a little bit of an overstatement, too.
You're
making it seem like he's cooked.
I didn't say he was completely cooked. What I'm saying is that he's 35. And what 35 has told me is this. It's not the injury portion of it. It's the bouncing back portion of it. Things linger a little bit more. So while you thinking, okay, he's got a little boo-boo, then a week or a month goes by and he's still got that nagging injury, and then he can't perform for that. That's what old does. Old doesn't mean you can't, you know, ramp it up like you want to. It just means that your recovery time, your ability to play stretches of games back to back or play 4 games in 7 days, those things catch up to you because you're 35.
There's another comment that we have here, which is from Bam Adebayo, who was asked by Anthony about the relationship that he has with De'Aaron Fox. Because De'Aaron Fox is now in
rumors. I figure you.
Very interesting comments, Leroy. Very interesting.
Yeah?
Bam Adebayo says, quote, on their close friendship, they were college roommates. Bam was a groomsman at his wedding. He says, quote, that's my man. He says, that was my college roommate. Our relationship for me, I think, is very solid. I was in his wedding. I was a groomsman. That just shows a level of respect, and it shows a level of respect in the bond that we have. So he says that they have not talked about any trade possibilities.
Wink. Wink.
They haven't talked about any
see
trade
how he makes
possibilities.
It. Wait, see how he makes the story what he wants it to be?
I mean,
what?
Come
so you
on,
think,
no.
Wait. Wink. So you think Bam's lying?
Yeah.
Wink.
Yeah. Don't they all lie?
I think actually, like, I know Andy didn't put that in his article, but I think what he forgot is he forgot. Bam has not talked.
Can I just say this? It's amazing doing a show with you, and we read the same story.
What?
And you come out of that story with, wink, like, he's lying, because it doesn't fit what you want.
I don't even know if I want him, to be honest with you. I don't even know if I want De'Aaron Fox.
And
I will say,
you'll determine if you want him or not, if you end up with him or not, right?
I mean, hard
because
to say.
Because if you don't get it, see, either way, it's going to work out for Tom. Because if he ends up going somewhere else, never wanted him. And then if
I don't
he
do
ends
that.
Up coming here, dude,
I don't,
dude,
do that. I don't do that.
Want him from the jump.
I don't do
you
that.
You don't?
I don't do that.
You don't?
I don't do that.
You didn't do that with Dame?
I really want him.
You didn't do that with Spider?
I thought we were going to get Spider.
Never
and we
did.
Oh,
and then you say you never wanted him.
I didn't say I never wanted him. I didn't say I never wanted him.
Come on.
I didn't say I never wanted him.
Wait. Marcos?
Never wanted him.
That was for Lowry. I never wanted him. I never wanted him.
Never wanted Messi.
What's wrong with
never
you?
Wanted him.
Wait, hold on.
Never wanted him.
See? We've been down this road before.
You even said that about Messi, dude. About,
I think you even said it last week.
Right.
You said it last week about
Like, you're not. Just,
no, wait,
just accept
wait,
the fact that
no,
you're wishy-washy.
I'm not wishy-washy.
ESPN when you were
so,
on ESPN.
Okay, let's be clear. Let's get him on record. Mm-hmm. Do you want De'Aaron Fox or not?
For the right price.
See what he does?
For the right
see
price.
See what he does? Wait.
I'm not giving
wait,
up a warehouse.
Who had to be shot with a tranquilizer gun over Dame?
I wanted Dame. Mm. I admit I wanted Dame.
It's true.
I loved Dame.
As soon as he ended up in Milwaukee, you called him a coward.
He was a little bit of a coward. I mean, that can't be denied. He was a little bit of a coward.
Because he didn't want to come to your team?
No, because he didn't go full Jimmy. That's how you get off a team.
But you see how full Jimmy's working out?
Well, he might end up on the Suns. He might still get what he wants.
And we're going to end up with Bradley Beal. Then what?
We're not going to end up with Bradley Beal.
Okay. That's what they say.
We're not going to end up with Bradley Beal.
Right. We're going to have to, if it was going to be one of those things, the Suns take him and we're going to send a sweetener?
No. Why would we have to send a sweetener for their contract? They're going to have to send a sweetener.
If we take Beal.
Sweetener.
No. If we, they'll send the sweetener. I don't know if the sweetener will go to the Heat, but they will send a sweetener. We're not sending any sweetener. We're sending Jimmy Butler out the door to the team that he wants to go to.
Man, I got to tell you.
What?
I felt this kind of, like, just uncomfortable about a situation when, and different, I'm not saying they're the same, but same feeling when the Browns signed Deshaun Watson. Not because of the people they are, but just the situation just made me like, wow, that's a lot of money for a guy who hasn't played football in him.
No, that's not how you did like, that. You're flip-flopping now.
I'm not flip-flopping.
I remember exactly.
No, here's what I said.
Actually, I have sound.
I'm gonna tell,
I have
I'm,
a sound clip of you and your reaction wait, when you got Deshaun Watson.
I'm going to tell you what I said. I said the Browns and ownership really wanted him. That was the only way you're going to get him, so they made the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I said, I don't.
I think the way it actually went was, the Cleveland Browns have signed Deshaun Watson to $230 million guaranteed, and Leroy was.
No. First of all.
That's what you did.
Nah, I know you're lying. Nah, I know you're lying, because, like, no.
Oh, man. We'll take a break here on the show. We are live from Las Vegas Radio Row for David Benavidez, David Morrell. Thanks again to Premier Boxing Champions for flying us out here, for the accommodations, and for putting us up at New York, New York. Having a great time here in Sin City. We'll take a break. Back with more after this.
Previously on
Tobin and Leroy.
Just get Damian Lillard to the Heat.
That's it.
I'm tired of waiting, Riles.
Get the tranquilizer.
Y'all. Whoa. Look out. What is it good for?
to me. Oh,
oh. Welcome back, everybody. It is Tobin and Leroy here with you. The legendary Jim Lampley sitting down with us here. He's going to be co-hosting an exclusive viewer chat in real time throughout Saturday's David Benavidez, Dave Morrell World Championship on an HD live stream. The card gets going at 8 o'clock. We're having a bunch of fun out here. What an honor it is to talk to you, Jim. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. My privilege. Good to be here.
So you were telling us, I was hearing the music was going on at the same time. You were at the Sonny Liston Cassius Clay fight in Miami?
Very first live prize fight I ever saw. I lived on Sunset Drive between 97th and 98th Avenues. I think I was a 10th grader, or maybe I was either a 9th grader at South Miami Junior High or a 10th grader at Southwest. I think I was a 10th grader at Southwest that particular year. I saved lawn mowing and car washing money for what felt like months, might have been several weeks, but whatever. I bought a ticket, a single ticket, to go to Cassius Clay versus Sonny Liston, February 25, 1964, in the Miami Beach Convention Center. My mother drove me over and dropped me off and went to a bar probably or a restaurant in Miami Beach and waited for all of it to end. And I watched what was at that moment in time the biggest upset in boxing history.
Did you feel it? Did you realize it, like, in that moment, even as a kid, save up for it? Like, you obviously had a love for it. So did it feel that big at that time?
My motivation was Cassius Clay. I was in love with everything about Cassius Clay. And I wound up, I had a kind of a mentor sitting next to me. There was a middle-aged guy who was obviously deeply intense boxing fan. And he made certain that I understood the level of upset that we were looking at. You know, he was guiding me through the whole fight. I'll never forget the moment in round four when Clay landed a right hand on Liston's cheek, and the cheek popped open a little cut, and blood spurted out. Sonny wiped it with the glove and looked at it and had this look of extreme amazement on his face. And this middle-aged guy who had now become my instructor in boxing turned to me and said, "Son, this might work out the way you wanted it to."
Wow.
And sure enough, it did. So, you know, I went home that night to 97th Avenue and Sunset Drive and got up on the roof of our crappy rented tract house and shouted, "I've upset the world. I'm the greatest of all time," et cetera, et cetera.
Did you see, because it was said back in the day, like, I watched, like, a PBS documentary about Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, like, his rise up in Miami. Like, what do you remember about him being in the community and just being embraced in South Florida?
Well, the single biggest thing I remember, because he was my chosen number one hero in life at that moment, was that 2 days later he stood on a street corner and told three boxing writers that he had changed his religion, he was changing his identity, that he would no longer be Cassius Clay, he was now Muhammad Ali, he was a member of the Nation of Islam, etc., etc. That was so jarring to me. That was so difficult to accommodate. I had fallen in love with this guy who was using a slave name, Cassius Marcellus Clay, to taunt the white establishment. I loved that part of him. How's he going to taunt the white establishment as Muhammad Ali? Well, you know, obviously that took it to another level, but at that time I didn't fathom much of anything about that, and I felt as though I was losing something. He was taking something away from me by changing his name from Cassius Marcellus Clay to Muhammad Ali. Later, of course, because of my genesis in boxing, later, of course, we met each other and became friends. And there's actually a spectacular moment in my life when I was the MC of the United States Boxing Writers Association Awards Dinner in New York in 1988. And I had a daughter, child of divorce, who was living in Manhattan, and I brought her to the event. And at one point I had to find somebody to watch her in the green room for 2 or 3 hours in the afternoon while I went and did some business for the dinner. And I looked around the green room and said, "Who can do me a favor and watch and entertain Brooke while I'm gone?" And Ali stuck up his hand and said, I'll do that. So
Muhammad Ali, the babysitter.
He babysat my daughter for 2 or 3 hours. Then he, that night, he called her up from the audience to come sit next to the two of us on the dais, because he could tell that she was not comfortable with the people she was quitting with. And he brought her up, and he sat her on the dais next to me, and with the whole crowd out there watching people get awards and stuff like that, he did card tricks and magic tricks for her. They were in their own world. And in the cab on the way back uptown to take her back to her mother's apartment, she turned to me in the dark and said, "Who was that man?" And I said, yeah. I said, "Wow."
Now, you thought the world of him before that moment.
Oh, my God.
But after that moment, you're like, I was right.
Well, he's it was just one of many moments,
right.
And they're in the book, which says to me, your life is astonishingly lucky, special.
Right.
It's a gift. You have to appreciate every moment of this. She turns to me in the cab and says, who was that man? I said, Brooke, that's a long story, and when you grow up completely, you will learn it. I'll tell you some of it you'll read, et cetera, et cetera. I'll just give you one thing to take to bed tonight. She was 8. I said, to take to bed tonight, he's the most famous man in the world. And not only is he the most famous man in the world, you can't dispute it. There's no logical argument against that. Mm-hmm. I could say that to somebody who hates his guts, and they would agree, yes, he's the most famous man in the world.
Right.
And she said, Dad, I just spent several hours with the most famous man in the world, one-on-one. I said, yes, you did.
Man, that's really cool. That's... Now, you know, you've been around boxing your whole life almost. I have been a big complainer of boxing. That we don't get to see the fights that we deserve as fans of boxing.
You could have said that in 1921.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
And that's where I was getting at. But these four guys that are fighting for these belts, it is amazing to me that in no division works out like this, where they fight this close to one another.
Every once in a while, you see a fight card that comes out of the Cracker Jack box, and you say, wow, look at this. Sport did something right.
Right.
People, you know, people did the job. The promoters got the right fighters to fight each other. So this is a great card with a great main event. And I think there's every reason for people to be tremendously excited about Saturday night. And the main event is a classic style fight. A southpaw technician with punching power against a monster destroyer with even more exceptional punching power.
Right.
Jim Lampley joining us here. He's got a new book coming out, It Happened. You were going to make a return to broadcasting for a Miami card, I think, for Teofimo Lopez, George Kambosos. I remember being in the room when we found out Teofimo had COVID, and it all kind of sent things spiraling. But, like, was there ever a part of you, Jim, that just, like, missed out on getting that opportunity? Because that was going to be, you know, this undisputed lightweight championship. You were going to be back. And then all of a sudden it kind of turned into a circus where, like, Holyfield was back in the ring and whatnot. Like, the whole thing and domino effect went away. But, like, I was almost as excited to hear you back on the call as I was for the fight.
When HBO left boxing in December of 2018, I reflexively assumed that one of these streaming services or another boxing vendor would make me an offer I couldn't refuse, and I would wind up calling boxing matches for a few more years. Didn't happen. I just, you know, crickets. Nothing
happened. That's crazy
happened.
To me.
And then eventually, through the auspices of a manager in Los Angeles with whom I've broken up now, I signed a contract with Triller and for an extraordinary sum of money to call that fight. It was a walk-in entry contract. It was Triller's way paying me a lot of money to basically say to other services, okay, we've got him. This is done. Stuff like that. And I never called a fight. So I have not called a fight since December 8, 2018, the last card on HBO, which was built around Cecilia Bricus, the number one woman fighter in the world at that moment. And now I work for PPV.com. I'm a pioneer in a new medium of communication, which is the collectively shared chat, a community enterprise. During the fight, I chat. The three other people who are working for PPV.com, Chris Algieri, Dan Canovio, Lance Pugmire, they chat. People who have accessed the pay-per-view of the fight join in, and they can chat back at us or agree with what we say or whatever. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe I'm talking boxing with Chris Algieri, that kind of thing. And so this is, I don't know, about my seventh fight with PPB.com. And it's been a great experience because it brought me back to ringside, brought me back to talking to people like you.
Like, I guess from that standpoint, you thought that somebody was going to come along. Like, what do you think it was, Jim? Because, like, I haven't heard, like, as a big boxing fan, I haven't heard anybody close to you, man. No one touches what you bring to fights to fight fans.
Well, look, I'm 75 years old, okay? So logic says whatever we do with regard to this guy, there's not a lot of future in it. He's not going to be calling fights when he's 85. And that's true. I don't think I would allow myself to verge into that territory. I did expect that someone would want 4 or 5 years of the voice that has more currency and recognition for boxing fans in this arena right now, but that didn't turn out to be the case. And I think there are possibly some personal animosities that go into it, but I don't know that for sure because I'm not going to ask anybody, you know, hey, do you hate my guts?
I mean, like, if you're doing a promotion or you're putting together a card, I mean, I don't understand. The first person I would call is the voice most associated with boxing in our era.
Well,
and that's the way it's always listen, it's always been that way for me. Like, I turn on a fight, and I'm like, oh, who's on the fight? Of course.
Well, maybe the people who are making these decisions now disagree with you and think that the guys who are calling the fights are better than Jim Lampley. That's one possibility.
Right.
Another possibility is, oh, he's 75 years old. He's just going to be doing it for the paycheck. How much work would he put into it? Ask the people at PPV.com if I still work.
Right.
I think they will tell you that I do. So, you know, at the end of the day, thank you, Fred. That's very kind. That's Fred Sternberg, ladies and gentlemen. He's very funny. He'll be back next Thursday night at the Ramada down the street.
The Ramada.
But, look, it's a mystery to me.
Right.
And I'd be lying if I said it wasn't a disappointment. It is a disappointment to me. I would like to have had other opportunities to call fights and to still be calling fights. But the universe decided this. So the universe decided PPV.com. I went back to Chapel Hill to the University of North Carolina and taught for 5 semesters. I taught a communications course, which was titled Evolution of Storytelling in American Electronic News Media. It was about news media, not sports media, but they're both in some ways live reporting, etc. And they're, they have similarities. And one of the things I taught in that course repeatedly was recognize, as you're examining all this, how changes in institutions, changes in personnel, changes in economics and finance, and particularly changes in technology can influence changes in the way stories are told. PPV.com is a perfect example of what I was talking about in class.
Right.
Because of the chat capability, because of that piece of technology, now you have a new storytelling mechanism, which is viewers sharing the
right
experience of talking about the fight with me and other, quote, boxing experts. So so I was prophetic in telling my students to pay attention to this kind of thing.
Well, it's going to be a hell of an experience. If you guys want to experience Saturday night with the great Jim Lampley, PPV.com is where you guys could do it. An exclusive viewer chat in real time. David Benavidez and David Morrell, this was a thrill, Jim. Thank you so much for giving
us some
time. We appreciate it, and looking forward to this weekend.
Love you, Miami. Talk to you later.
We'll take a break. Back with more after this.
Regulators! Mount up!
It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warren G was on the streets trying to consume some skirts for the eve so I could get some phones rolling in my ride, chilling all alone.
Welcome back, everybody. Tobin and Leroy here with you. That means JFix Hobnob.
Back up.
Thanks again to Jim Lampley for stopping by the show. That was cool.
There's probably only a few people that, because, you know, I can tell, like, stories when I was a kid with me not really understanding boxing, having an opportunity to see it or watch it or, you know, hear my dad and my uncle talk about boxing and all that stuff. But you tell that story, and then he can add to it. Like, oh, I'll tell you my first story, me seeing a fight. And then he starts talking about seeing Cassius Clay, which is a whole nother story, right? But what you guys need to understand is Jim Lampley to boxing is probably what any name you associate with a sport. You know what I mean? And so
no one's really taking the reins. Like, the one thing with, like, UFC, which doesn't have the history, obviously, but, like, when they lost Mike Goldberg and they moved on to John Anik, at least John Anik was like, oh, that guy's friggin' good.
Right.
Like, I could still associate now historic moments with him, but it hasn't happened with Jim.
It hasn't happened, and part of it is because the way boxing is set up, you have so many different, you know, venues, so many different companies that have their own guy. Like, we used to see all the big fights on either HBO or Showtime. HBO Showtime had their two people, and that was that. It's not like that anymore. Everybody wants their star. And sometimes the fights that you have aren't as big. Whereas Showtime, HBO, they always had the big fights. They always had, because the promotions, that was it. It's not like that anymore.
Shmeathan says, the old love telling stories.
Such a bastard. You know, hey, dumbass, that's kind of what books are for. And the guy wrote a book.
It's coming out, by the way, April 15th.
Right.
You guys can get Jim Lampley's It Happened.
So, and he's from Miami.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, man.
The this is interesting. So, the Utah Hockey Club, they need a name. All right? Because that's stupid. Can't be called the Utah Hockey Club.
I told you what we calling them, the Utes. We call them the Utes.
Well, apparently,
or the Utah Youths.
So they had the name picked out. They were going to be the Yetis.
What's wrong with that?
Copyright infringement.
Really?
For the stupid cooler.
So what is Yeti going to? They're trying to see if they can use it.
They're not allowed to use it, apparently. They got turned down. It got rejected by the Patent and Trademark Office because it is too generic nature of a name, and also pre-existing trademarks, most notably Yeti, the cooler brand. So now they got to choose between either keeping Utah Hockey Club, the Utah Mammoth.
What's that last one?
Wasatch, I think, is what the famous mountain range.
Is what?
Wasatch, I think. Is that how it is? Wasatch?
See? There you go.
I don't know, dude.
No, go with Mammoth so with we can Mammoth. At least pronounce it.
Yeah, I'm with you, 100%.
Or they call it the Utah Dubs.
So, like, that's what the Utah would be if the Jazz made sense in Utah. That's what they would be because they always had the mountains.
Well, people don't understand. The Jazz is the former New Orleans team. That's why they're the Utah Jazz.
Right.
Wasatch.
Wasatch is.
Because I remember New Orleans Jazz. With Pistol Pete Maravich.
New Orleans should be the Jazz still. Like, they should give the Pelican. Like, honestly, the Utah Jazz, it's a ridiculous name.
It really is.
It's a ridiculous name.
But New Orleans, they got a lot of birds and crap around, so, like, they're the Pelicans.
I know, but, you know.
The Hornets kind of sucked.
That's because they came from Charlotte.
Right.
And then the Charlotte became the Bobcats.
You know, football did a good job of that. Football, you move your team, you lose all your crap.
Pretty much.
Right? The Browns were the first ones to do that.
Yeah, they let Tennessee be the Oilers for like a year, I think.
Yeah. But then the Houston became the Texans, so the Oilers are gone.
They should be, yeah. Why did they go back to the Oilers? I don't know.
And when they wear throwbacks, Tennessee wears the throwbacks.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
I think they should play for it. So, yeah, it was really fun. Like, because you hear stories and you hear, a sport affects him.
Whatever. Hold on. You said whoa while getting close to his phone. That means that there could be something breaking.
It's not Jimmy Butler related.
All right. Get out of here.
It's still whoa because I
say whoa.
Even...
Well, there's a story from, I guess, the Wall Street Journal that is.
You got notifications on them, too?
No. Somebody else's notifications led me to this.
Gotcha.
So it's a story from the Wall Street Journal. I'm just going to read the tweet because I haven't read the article yet, and I kind of want to. But it says, here's just the tweet. Federal prosecutors have been investigating whether NBA player Terry Rozier manipulated his performance as part of an illegal sports betting scheme. The inquiry is part of a wider government investigation that has already ensnared Jonte Porter.
That would be... How can you do that? You make 20-plus million a year.
They think... Okay.
There's not enough... can't pay you enough money to risk it, right?
This is from Anthony Chang. The Heat is referring a request for comment to the NBA. NBA spokesman Mike Bass. The league conducted an investigation and did not find a violation of NBA rules. We are now aware of an investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of New York related to this matter, and I've been cooperating with the investigation.
It's associations.
That's so great.
By the way, that's all it is. Right? If you're associated with someone, then they're going to question you if they were caught up in some stuff.
To me, it's less about the potential of him actually doing it. I don't think he did it. I just think it's going to be hilarious. And if I was in that locker room, I'd totally bring it up that you were so bad for 2 months. The NBA is like, this guy's throwing games.
Unless it explains him being so bad.
Okay. Because he was historically bad. I think it was like 15%. Or like, it was historically
bad. It's a ridiculous Leroy.
So now, here's the other crazy thing. Basketball is weird in that you go through these stretches. What if all of a sudden he turns it around?
I don't know.
Then they're going to say he did it then. He's in a no-win situation just because of the circumstances he's in, right? That's a weird thing, right? If all of a sudden he goes out and scores 35 and goes like 8-for-9 in the playoffs, right? Like, isn't that not crazy?
People hitting those unders, dude.
If you bet under on Terry Rozier for the entire month of December and January, you made a decent amount of money, but not $20 million.
Okay. Right. Here's from Tim Reynolds. The Wall Street Journal reports that Terry Rozier's performance in a March 23rd, 2023 game with Charlotte is being probed by federal investigators. Rozier has not been accused of wrongdoing, we can confirm.
Oh, okay. All right, so there you go. So it's the associates. That
I guess
the associates, not him.
Terry, you were so bad during January. They launched an investigation on you, dude.
I really thought this was like, I think Anthony DiNaro puts it well on Twitter. I thought this was Central. Like, I thought this was NBA Central. Yeah. I thought we were being parodied.
All right.
Yeah. I thought we were being. I don't know. I mean, obviously, we'll get more of the details on this. This is going to. Flying fast and heavy, but yeesh. All right.
Wouldn't that be something to add to this?
What do we eat for lunch?
Season? What? That's what you're thinking about, right?
It's 9:50. Once you told me he was cleared.
It's Leroy.
I hope he's cleared.
They just said he's not under investigation.
Hmm.
Just wanted to be questioned.
Hmm.
Riley put out this.
Oh, man.
Wow.
I told you, 8 Dog. You say we got Nate Dog and 8 Dog.
He nailed it. We got a contest for you guys. The Slam Dunk in Vegas. Traveling accommodations for one winner and 3 guests to Las Vegas, plus $20,000. It's easy to enter. Just download the free Odyssey app, log in or register for an account, and listen to WQM or any participating station. You listen each day for a minimum of 1 hour for your entry, and you can do it every day. The Slam Dunk in Vegas. A great prize and your chance to win. Listen to WQAM on the free Odyssey app. Travel dates are March 17th to the 22nd, 2025. This is a national contest. We're out in Vegas right now. I want to thank Premier Boxing for the travel and accommodations over at New York, New York, as we are here for David Benavidez, David Morrell, as they get down for their title eliminator grudge match coming up on pay-per-view this Saturday on Amazon Prime Video. We'll take a break here on the show. Final hour coming on up. Thanks again to Jim Lambley for stopping by this hour. If you guys missed that, check out the podcast or our YouTube page. We're back with more after this.